Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
You're tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hey guys, and welcome back to the AfterBuzz TV Walking Dead After Show. I'm Dave Klein, once again joined here by Nando Velasquez with that nice laptop setup ready to go.
How you guys doing? Hi, my laptop. Now that I don't have anybody here with me.
I know, now you got all this room. Yeah, so unfortunately Joyce and Daryl both couldn't make it tonight. Yeah. Joyce 2 weeks out.
I'm afraid
maybe she did get bit.
I don't know. She said she was sick, right?
Well, 2 weeks ago she said she was sick, and now she's not here.
Now she just went, when she called you, she was just like, brains.
It was just mumbled words. It was text.
Okay.
It was just like,
so if you know what happened to Joyce, please let us know.
That's all it was.
Maybe Hydra did take her. I don't know.
So we're going to do something a little bit different, kind of mix it up, have a little more fun this episode. Just go ahead and talk about the big reveal.
Well, first of all, let's just mention we did make an announcement last week.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Nando. Yeah, so last week we said that we would have a certain mullet-bearing Eugene on the show this week, and unfortunately, it was a last-minute booking where he is on Talking Dead tonight. So as we filmed the same night, so that's Josh McDermott.
What an episode to have him back on. But I think that's probably why he wasn't actually, some people said he was already scheduled on Talking Dead. He wasn't, at least not when we made the announcement. But what a week. Obviously, I could totally understand why Hardwick stole Josh McDermott from us.
Damn you, Hardwick!
totally understandable.
But yeah, again, I was like, this is his big episode. So his big episode, because we do get the reveal. Something that we've been talking about since we first met him is he in fact actually a scientist? Does he actually have this mission? Know what he's talking about? Mm-hmm. Turns out he does not. So that's been eating him up inside. Got to do with all sorts of things.
And there were lots of clues throughout the episode. I actually felt from the very beginning of the episode that we were finally going to get the reveal. And I love the way it came out. But yeah, finally, and we can say this now because it's happened already.
Yeah.
But, you know, anyone who's read the comics is familiar with Eugene and not being, having the cure.
Right.
So that's not a spoiler anymore. But it wasn't really hard to even go around like, well, you know, fake it and be like, well, do you think Eugene's lying? Do you think he's telling the truth? It's been really weird to kind of have that conversation from week to week.
I think this.
It could be or could be not. Or, you know, we kept trying to convince ourselves that he might be telling the truth. But I think there were a lot of clues like that. So I'm talking, you know, when it first hit me in the beginning when they had, when they were talking about hairstyles.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how he likes his hair. And it hit me that his speech this whole time has always been very military. Like, he knows what he's doing, but it's like, I'm on a mission, blah, 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 blah. And he has such a different kind of hairstyle than someone in the military would have. So I think that was the first thing, saying, you know what? I don't know why I ever thought about it that way. I don't know if the writing just made me think of it at that time or what. But that, and then even Maggie saying, you're not what you seem to be.
All those little clues, everything cluing in. Well, then also, especially, I mean, the big indicator, the biggest red flag possible was when he was trying to hinder their mission himself, as he admitted to Tara, by putting the shards in the air filter, which stopped and ended up being a bit more explosive than he thought it would be, literally.
Well, remember last season when he had that gun. When they had a tank that they had last season? Forgive me if I can't remember off the top of my head, but remember when Eugene shot up their vehicle? It wasn't a tank, it was like a military truck.
Yeah.
Remember when he was trying to kill the walkers, trying to save Glenn and the rest of them, and he ended up shooting up the truck that they were using to get to DC?
Yeah, yeah. So even you think then, that was probably on purpose?
I think we either had Cutlass on the show or we had McDermott, and Cutlass was even like, yeah, very interesting. Well, I guess we'll have to figure out if he really did that. And I think that scene also comes into play when you saw how Eugene handled the hose
later on because
he handled that expertly.
Right, that's a great point, because he just knew, he knocked out all the walkers better than six times at the county fair. Never seen someone handle it like that before.
Exactly.
And the gun can't be that much different.
Mm-hmm.
So I do want to address this to people who watch Talking Dead. People saying that they watched Talking Dead last week, and it was announced last week that Josh McDermott would be on the show. We just got from our producers last week to say Josh McDermott would be on from our producers. So I am sorry. That is what I was told.
You know,
I was belaying that information.
I just said that. I will tell you guys this. I had a press release a couple of days after, and it didn't say McDermott's name on it. I did not watch the full episode at the time. I was out.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you weren't.
I got the press release before.
Nando wasn't here last week. So
I wasn't here.
Anyways, my point is, it was something my producers told me. I'm sorry to everyone. I just want to apologize.
We're going to throw him another fire.
So thank you for letting me know, Barth. And John Wayne saying, F you, Chris Hardwick. Yes.
What?
Yes.
He's a nice guy.
Other than stealing, yes!
He's a nice guy.
All right, so anyways, back to Eugene, though. But that's a great point that you bring up. I hadn't made that connection with the machine gun, so that is a really good point that it does go as far back as that. And I mean, we kept on seeing throughout every time we see him, he always wants to stay back. Anything that can make him stay back, he's always like, well, let's just stay with Rick's group, and I want to stay there.
Lonely. And part of it, I think, is
I'm sure it's,
lonely.
I think it's both. I mean,
we saw that in the final flashback.
The self-help section where he's a little lonely.
There were so many really, like, the whole beginning. I know we're jumping around a little bit here, so forgive me on this, but it's all about Eugene anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole thing when they first found that bookstore and the fact that they were burning pages, to me, that kind of really was impactful to me, because they were burning pages to start a fire.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, books have intelligence.
Yeah.
And they're literally ripping up possibly the only real intelligence they have, or the only like historical references they have when it comes to intelligence, just to stay alive, to be primal, and almost in a world without books, people like Eugene who talk the talk are more important.
Right.
When you think of it that way.
Yeah, and, well, I was definitely thinking of that significance, too, because the first thing, I mean, to me, what I think of when they started burning the pages was more of Nazism and them trying to get rid of all that previous knowledge and things like that, but that's exactly what you associate with it is burning away knowledge.
Yeah.
That's the exact association you get. So I found that a really interesting parallel with what was going on as well. And then that major reveal at the end. And yeah, and Abraham definitely taking it the worst by far group. I mean, first he bent down, upset on both knees, but this is literally who that character had become, was Eugene.
Well, you know, there was a moment with Abraham, if we're moving to Abraham, and I know we'll start talking about the flashbacks, there was that moment in the very beginning in the bus when Eugene's running his mouth off and he talks about T. Brooks Ellis, and it was a really interesting moment. I don't know if you saw it. It was a close-up of Abraham, and he like lifted his eyebrows up, and I almost felt, to me, it looked like recognition of, like, either he knew that I don't know if T. Brooks Ellis is part of the Human Genome Project, but it almost looked like Abraham kind of knew that it was a ruse, that Eugene was a ruse all along.
Yeah.
And so it really brings into a question to me, like, you know, Eugene says it later on in the when he's talking to Tara, that he has no value without this, you know, if he doesn't do the cure, if he doesn't save the day, save the world, he has no value. And I think, in a way, I really question if Abraham 100% believes Eugene.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about Abraham a little bit more.
Well, that's also...
That gives him value in the fact that he gives Abraham hope.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it's also, I mean, as you were saying, mentioning the T. Brooks Ellis thing, this is something that's been a common theme with Eugene, too, and trying to establish I'm smarter than you.
Yeah.
And I guess, like, also burning away the pages and no one else reading the books except for him, that keeps on, that is how he's able to sound smart and how he's able to just relay information, like when he's talking about the T. Brooks Ellis thing and just saying, like, oh yeah, he was the, you know, he headed up the Human Genome Project, he was my old boss and things like that. And, like, no one can question him because he just sounds smart from everything that he was doing. So again, with the burning away of the pages, it's almost like burning away everything that had created.
Funny, because he read about him in a book, and he's burning the evidence.
Right,
that he's the only one that knows this information.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it's like burning that away, like everything that as you'd said, it makes him more important.
Yeah,
absolutely. because he is the keeper of the knowledge.
You know, while we're talking about Eugene, and before we get into that one scene that I know we'll want to get into, especially about the bookstore, you know, one little scene that I thought was really, really interesting, I don't know if it was ad-libbed or what, but I thought it was really cool, was, well, first of all, we see him hanging back, and we see Tara, who at times can be frozen herself in battle. You know, she's scared in battle. We see she's the one that actually saves Eugene, and she's the one that's telling him, come on, you know, do it till he saves, think about somebody else, at least, if you can't do it for yourself, save someone else's life. And we see her being the one to kind of like get Eugene out. And then when he kind of saves Tara, he stabs her. He stabs the walker, but he doesn't really bring the walker down. Tara has to assist him still.
Yeah, he also stabs it in the back, which, as we know, doesn't kill a walker.
Doesn't do anything because he's inexperienced. But afterwards, I don't know if it was that same walker, but it was, I guess, a female walker.
It was the same walker they spit on, if that's what you're referring to.
Right?
Yeah, it's the same one.
I thought that was a really, really interesting. I thought that was very layered in a way, because I felt like even though we don't see his past, like maybe he pictured it as somebody in his past.
See, I was kind of questioning that too, because I rewound it, double check, and it's the same clothes and everything. It's the same walker that he took down or helped take down. And I was thinking it could be a number of things. One could be the fact that as he keeps on having this crisis of he's not strong enough to survive in this world and things like that, that could be the first walker he's ever sort of taken down.
Hmm.
And then he grows stronger throughout the episode, because that's another thing that we get as a theme with Eugene throughout the episode, is him growing stronger. Because before, he never, presumably, from my understanding, had taken out a walker before, really.
Yeah.
And then this was his first time really getting personal with a walker. And then after that, he did the hose and actually really took out walkers.
Yeah.
And throughout the episode, he kept on getting stronger to the point where he actually admitted the truth, which, you really think about it, is the bravest thing out of everything that he did.
He gained confidence, and he came to that moment where he finally revealed the truth. And if you think about it, too, I mean, look, not that he really was expecting to get knocked out the way he did by Abraham, which was freaking awesome, by the way, that whole scene.
Yeah.
But not that he was expecting it, but the fact that he, you know, didn't like scream like a little girl or run away or anything like that. And not that he had a chance to, really. But the fact that he kind of, in a way, he took it.
Yeah.
I mean, whether he expected it or not, that was a big moment, too. The fact that he took a beating from Abraham.
Yeah, he didn't do his running away from the walker flashback moment. We have Bart on the chat saying, I've worked at a library and bookstore and thought the same thing as you, Nando, back when we were talking about the library stuff.
Yeah.
John Wayne, on the chat saying, all the books are written and books are printed, so no new stuff, which... It's true.
Yeah, no stuff.
But,
you get to create your own.
Right.
You get to create your own future or even your own past if you don't have any reference to it.
And we have Bart on the chat saying, "I think Abraham, back to Abraham, has always known that Eugene was lying, so possibly just lying to himself or trying, as you said, just trying to create some hope.
Yeah,
and just give himself hope.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, like for us watching it, even when I first read about Eugene in the comics, I didn't believe him from the get go, and just so from the get go, to me.
It's one of those things that we even if we look at it and we try and look at it with as innocent as possible, knowing what happens in the books, it's still kind of hard to be on a show like this with people who don't know what happens and to say, I don't know, it's kind of hard to tell if he's lying or not.
Well, I just mean like when I first read it, though, and I think it's one of those things where you have someone who overtalks something to a point where... It's like he felt like he was always trying to prove himself in a way and overprove himself.
Yeah.
And the constant, like, well, that's classified type of thing is just an easy way of...
Such an easy out.
That's an easy out, just a very easy out.
And again, you got a guy in a mullet, you know, kind of heavy set, wearing those really awkward khaki shorts saying, it's classified. You know, you got to be like, you got to laugh at that. You got to be like, that's a little ridiculous, even in this world. So.
But yeah, I do like his... He also has this whole mullet story throughout
the Samson,
as you mentioned,
the
Samson story. So that was another, and we mentioned it briefly at the beginning, but that was an overarching theme with him throughout, is finding out the story behind the mullet.
Yeah.
Because everyone asked him or made fun of him from the very beginning. It was Rosita at first, or maybe Tara at first, joking that he should get it chopped off.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally arcing to him, well, just that explanation to him from Maggie about why he has it.
Yeah.
Which you touched on as we get the reveals.
But I think, again, it's kind of like him getting his confidence. In a way, he gained his power this episode, too. It wasn't really the hair. As he said, Samson, it wasn't really about the hair. He ended up gaining his power regardless of the hair.
So the other major character we should talk about who had a huge arc this episode.
Who's also on The Talking Dead.
Also on Talking Dead.
Gardwick!
Love
you, Chris, if you ever listen to us. I mean, he doesn't have time to listen to us.
Anyway. Go... Have a nice night. The other character would be Abraham. Had a huge story, especially with his flashbacks, where we finally find out some backstory behind him, where at first you just see him, and he's got this constant cut on his hand that keeps on reopening, and it seems to spawn all the way back to him flashing back to what I would assume is him killing live people in humans. That would be my assumption, but it's never made clear.
Well, he's in a supermarket.
Yeah.
And it isn't made clear, but just the fact that he's using his bare fists like that over and over again makes me think that they were real people. So it's probably like almost like we've seen it so many times, you know, the humans are scarier than the walkers in this world. And it's probably, who knows, two groups of people trying to loot the same place. And of course, we see that he's protecting what should be, I believe, his wife.
Yeah, his wife and two kids.
That's looked a lot like him, so I'm guessing that was kids. And so we can only assume he was protecting his wife, and he let loose. I mean, we could tell this man has a military background based on what he said and how he looks, and his back
and his dog tags in this episode.
Exactly. Yeah. So we can tell all that, but this was a man who went like completely, you know, crazy to protect his family.
Yeah,
did whatever it was to do,
and to the point where
can of soup or whatever.
Yeah, it looked like some can of some sort, just beating someone up with it. But yeah, and there's other things he talks about throughout the episode, like how it's become too easy. Mm-hmm. He was telling Len to kill the living. It's like it's too easy for him now. So that implies he's obviously done in the past, and I think this was that instance, especially when you see how his wife reacts to it, and how afraid his kids and his wife are of him.
Mm.
And it's like he even realizes it himself in the situation that at first, like, it's maybe they were afraid because they're being attacked by walkers or some other group, and it's clear that they're afraid of him and their father.
And that's really sad to see, too. I mean, we don't know exactly when these flashbacks happen in this post-apocalyptic world, you know, like how long after the walkers have been turning. It was a really freaky thing to do. Here he is trying to, you know, this is more or less what he's fighting for. He's fighting for his family, and his family frightened of him based on what they've seen, what we didn't see. And what I thought was really interesting about the flashbacks, just a side note, is, well, first of all, it was I think just about all of them were right after a commercial break.
They came right after a commercial break.
And they were all, none of them were really over, they didn't feel like they were over 30 seconds long. And they were very sudden, and it was like, I don't know if it was music or what in the background, but it was like it felt very high intensity, and then it cut to a very calm, quiet, it was just a really, like, weird transition.
Yeah, it's like that background was always haunting him in his mind.
Yeah, it was like, it felt like PTSD a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me of that a little bit.
Yeah, I'd agree with that assessment.
Yeah,
definitely.
So I thought it was a really good job. I'm looking up at the director for the thing because I wanted to give him a shout out, but I didn't have a chance to. But anyway, we'll give him a shout out a little bit later. But yeah, I thought it was a really good reference. You know, the directing was really spot on with that, and I loved that.
Yeah, and it definitely gives you insight to his character, and then that's when he meets Eugene, too, during those flashbacks, as he finds the corpses of his family.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. I mean, that doesn't always happen for characters in this world. They don't actually always find their family. But actually, another parallel, though, with what you mentioned with the fact that it's his family afraid of him and seeing who he has to have become in this world, essentially.
Yeah.
And it also parallels to Rick and Carl, and Carl seeing what Rick went through, killing someone by biting them.
Yeah.
And that extent, and then Rick being kind of a little concerned about what Carl was going to think of him and what sort of monster he'd become in this world.
I think that's really interesting that you say it. Like, I think that's a really good comparison when you think about that. I mean, we've seen Rick do whatever it takes to protect his family with a very different result. Of course,
I mean, that was after over a year had passed, so Carl had gotten used to the world and the way things worked.
Yeah.
Whereas presumably this was in the beginning.
It was probably a different world then. Yeah, I mean, we don't really see the backstory exactly on why Abraham was wailing on these guys at all. We can only make assumptions as to what they were doing. I mean, in the scene with Rick, he was trying to save, his son from getting raped.
Right.
You know? Not to make a big difference, but again, I think that's a really good comparison when you think that Rick has had very similar similar response.
Yeah, I mean, so it's that father who will do everything it takes to protect his family. And I mean, it's also that sadness of then the family who's seeing someone transform and they didn't realize they could be that person and then unfortunately not accepting it.
Well, and then, you know, this comes full circle at the end of the episode,
yeah,
when right after Abraham loses it and starts pounding, wailing on Eugene,
yeah,
and we see Rosita, who we'll talk about her sex right. a little bit later, but we see Rosita get in the way. She has her hand on her gun, and we get a close up of his bloody hand, the same bloody hand. And
yeah.
I didn't notice this before, so if you guys did. Props to you, but the bloody hand. For some reason, I didn't notice the ring on his wedding finger.
Yeah, you're right. Actually, I noticed it in that last scene, but I didn't think about it, which is a good parallel considering that he still keeps it. Yet he seems to move down with Rosita in a
way. So I think that was, if anything, just to it maybe. I'm sure it was on before, but just the way they shot it, it was just more obvious. But it obviously drew that comparison to his wife and his kids.
Right.
And here's a moment again when he lost it.
Yeah.
You know, and he's wailing on somebody, and he was going to keep going. If Rosita didn't get in the way, he would have killed Eugene. It's amazing Eugene didn't die from that, as it was.
Oh, yeah.
And he would have totally killed him. And we see that moment, and we could feel in that moment what's going through Abraham's mind. Like, oh, no, this is what happened with my wife.
Yeah.
You know? Rosita is obviously standing up to him. His wife couldn't do that. His wife had to run away, but he still sees that comparison.
Yeah, and then throughout this episode, too, you get with him the importance of just how much it's stuck in his head, the whole Eugene thing, which maybe is his redemption for everything, it would seem like, and that's, in his mind, his redemption story, possibly, where he is so gung-ho and set on getting to D.C. that he refuses to accept any reason at all, because everything that would slow you down, even though, as Rosita points out, in the long run is the smarter decision and actually might cause you to move forward without as many stops and breaks, he refuses to listen to anything because he's just gets in that gung-ho mindset.
Well, absolutely. I mean, he's in that mindset, and, you know, he says, you know, we don't go back. Retreat means we lose. This was after the bus crash, actually, when he's saying that this is war. Retreat means we lose. We don't go back. And I'm sure that was also in reference to his past. He doesn't want to go back to that.
Yeah.
And we see that later on when they're trying to go through that hurt. That reminded me of, like, the slaughterhouses off the I-5 when you're driving up to San Francisco for some reason, those places. It just reminded me of that. We see them when they're trying to go through there, and Abraham insists on going through. It's the same thing. It's like, we don't go back.
Right.
And this is his mission. And what I found really, really interesting about all of this, and this ties back into Eugene, is because this is the catalyst of what causes Eugene to confess, I think, and I thought it was done beautifully by the writers, is that Eugene said he had no value, and Eugene's a coward, and he said he had no value.
Right.
And it comes to the point where Abraham is just so incensed to be on the mission, because this mission is his only hope.
Yeah.
And we see that it's his only hope, that he's willing to, even if everyone else says no, the mission must continue.
Yeah.
So he grabs Eugene like he's a piece of meat,
right?
You know,
like
he's just a thing, like some luggage, and he takes Eugene, and he's like, we're going through it. Everyone knows it's a suicide mission, and that ultimately is the fear that draws Eugene to realize, oh my God, this is much worse than lying. You know, it's much worse to lie right now than to tell the truth. I gotta tell the truth so I could save myself. He was literally telling the truth to save himself.
Save himself and all. Yeah, just everything. So absolutely, it's definitely a save himself situation still.
But beautiful. I just loved how, it came out differently in the comic, but we could talk about that later. But I just loved how that reveal came out because of Abraham's...
Yeah, it was a very forced hand.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't like he had no other options. It was absolutely a last resort.
Bloody hand, but it's forced hand.
Yeah. John Wayne, by the way, on the chat point, has something that I wanted to bring up, so thank you for bringing that up, John Wayne. The fact that he's saying that I think Abraham hums to keep his mind occupied, and that is something that we kept on having throughout this episode, is Abraham's humming was very, very apparent. I hadn't noticed it in other episodes, so maybe it's just something where if he did it, it wasn't as clear. But this episode is a constant theme.
That's a good call. I noticed the humming, too, but I didn't think about it that much.
Yeah, so. It's something where they kept on having it. So also, like, when he was fixing the fire truck, he's humming. When he's first trying to start the fire truck, he's humming. It's almost also like a lot of times when it's something where I noticed, to me, it was something where he's hoping something's going to work, and it's almost like to calm his nerves. That was when I specifically noticed it, like trying to start the fire engine.
You know, music calms a savage beast too. So maybe he's trying to calm himself a little bit. You know, I'm sure maybe it comes back. Who knows? It could be like a favorite song that his kids were into or something. Who knows what it could be?
Yeah.
But I think it's really, really an interesting mannerism.
Absolutely.
That we got to see from this episode.
And Baha Havel saying on the whole Abraham thing, oh, hell no. Abe wanting to go through the ocean of walkers. I guess that's what she said. Just, oh, hell no.
Yeah, well, that's what everyone else said at that time. So, yeah,
now
absolutely.
Just slather yourself in walker blood and walk through. Go on!
You know what? It's amazing they don't think that way, but that was a pretty long distance to go.
Oh, yeah, that's a very, very long distance to go.
A lot of people think of covered in zombie guts.
Yeah, I was thinking about it. I was like, I think this is the most walkers we've ever seen in a shot, but maybe season one had more at the point with the... In their first city, but in Atlanta.
Maybe. Perhaps. I mean, it was such
But when you think about the wideness and how far that shot was stretching and just how many walkers you see, it seems like this could be the most we've ever seen in one shot.
In a way, I guess it's possible. I think so. Because it was covering miles.
Yeah.
The walkers were scattered around, but it was still a lot of them, and it was like miles to go.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, miles to go through that way.
So... We'll see where they end up next week, but on the way there, we do get the funny moment, too, with Eugene and Rosita, where, doing their thing. Also, Abraham being completely blunt about having sex, which was a great, funny moment.
Go get some sleep. I'm going to get a piece of ass first. That was his line, I believe.
Yeah. Glenn's just like, yep, didn't need to know that. Cool. And Eugene just creepily watching.
Yeah. And it was funny because he was in the self-help section.
Yeah.
Checking out, which obviously you got to love that joke. And I'm sure they loved it so much they had to title the episode Self-Help just for that episode.
Right? That was the only reason. It was just for that one joke.
That one line. That's what they did it for.
Yeah.
But really, really, you know, and here's a fun fact. This is the second show I've seen tonight. And this is not the second. This is the second show that has a scene like that.
Oh, did it really?
Having sex and then somebody else in the same room.
I imagine the other show you did tonight was creepier.
Was it creepier than Walking Dead? I don't know about creepier.
I don't know. I guess because this is almost like this was comedic in a way.
Well, I guess it was. I don't know if it was. Actually, it wasn't creepy. It's hard to describe, but you know what? I'll leave it to the people on YouTube to guess what show it is. So how about that?
Yeah, I just don't want to put spoilers for anyone.
If you know what shows I do, you probably know what it is. But anyway.
Yeah, so anyways. It was a good scene.
It was the second episode I saw today, the second show that aired today that had a scene slightly different, but very similar.
So why is that on all the writers' minds?
I don't know. It's that time of year. I don't know.
I guess so.
That's weird. But really, you know, look, we've seen Eugene, and I think it also lays into the fact that he spit on that female walker. You know, I feel like that's
also self help because he got good at spitting.
No, just the fact that you know, look, he doesn't.
That's lowbrow.
He's socially awkward. You know, he doesn't look like he even feels it that way. The way he talks about himself, you know, to Tara is like he has no value. This is him in the real world. He's worthless in the real world. He's probably by himself. He's probably very, I'm just assuming, he's probably very well read because books are his friend.
Yeah, I agree.
So.
And the whole video game thing too. As much as I love video games, he's very much a gamer.
He's proficient into video games because he talked about it before. Yeah. Exactly.
But yeah, absolutely. Everything that would be a loner activity. I mean, not to say that reading's good. I love video games. All this stuff's good, but if that's all you do, then you're not having any social interactions.
And he's staring at Abraham and Rosita, and they both know that he's there. I mean, you know, Rosita says that line, and Abraham laughs, and they don't care. And he doesn't seem to be offended by watching. And then when Tara notices him, he says it so bluntly. He's like, well, you know, it's no... I enjoy the female form. And he talks about this being a victimless crime. Him watching them have sex is a victimless crime. And then he says it gives him comfort and distraction. And that's the way he looks at it as a voyeur, because again, he's someone who's used to reading books. He's used to being a voyeur,
right? Yeah.
When it comes to everything else, he's not a participant. He's a coward. He hangs back.
And I don't know, maybe Abraham and Rosita are in the people watching. They get a kink. They're people at that kink.
I'm not doubting that either, apparently. At least Abraham doesn't seem to mind as much.
Yeah, Abraham doesn't mind. Rosita's a little weirded
bit.
Out.
A little bit. Well, yeah. You know, because it's, you know,
well,
we've
that's
seen,
who he's watching for.
Yeah, well, yeah. Obviously, we've seen Eugene kind of say things to Rosita, and he said stuff to Tara last season, too. So we know that Eugene's a little creepy in the sense that he likes women. He's just awkward.
Yeah.
But, of course the women get creeped out by that kind of conversation when he does that. So, yeah, absolutely.
So guest TW or HW view saying, I thought Eugene was a useless character. John Wayne saying Eugene is going to be like a MacGyver.
Why are you going to be like a MacGyver?
Yeah, I don't know why he's going to be like a MacGyver.
Like he can fix anything?
He's going to become super resourceful all of a sudden.
Hey, you know what? This gives him at least
I guess he was resourceful with the fire hose.
He was. And you know what? Now that the lie is out in the open, that's the interesting about Eugene. Now the lie is out in the open, he doesn't have to lie anymore. So, like, all those facts that he's always spewing out, like, trying to sound smart, now he gets to show his real value.
Yeah.
Because his real value was, he couldn't show his real value. Because it was a lie. His whole life, the mission was a lie.
And at this point, he can finally grow. Yeah. As a human, and also he gets these social interactions with Tara, who's trying to help him out. As we also see the awkwardness when she's trying to do the fist bump and talking to him, and she notices it too, and how socially awkward he is, and just but welcome to the human race as her line.
Yeah, but that's the thing too. Anytime somebody, if you think about it, anytime someone tried to bond with Eugene at all and try and bond with him, he would just start spewing facts, and he would just, it was a defense mechanism just as much, you know, and then he'd throw the classified. So now he doesn't have that. Now he's open and vulnerable. And I think it's going to be really, really, and this is when we had Josh McDermott on last season. I mean, I credited him because I think without, you know, going in too deep, I credited him because that the character of Eugene is a character that really has a really interesting arc.
Yeah.
From when we first see him, and we see it in this episode, how his arc is changing.
Well, you also have to give credit to both Tara and Maggie, mainly Tara in this episode, but I think that they are, especially Tara, the catalyst for him that's where he starts to get real social interactions, where it's especially with Tara, as he opens up to Tara and she actually accepts his mistake. Or, I guess, really bad mistake of putting shards in the air filter, but she accepts it. So it's things like that where, for him, that's got to give him the courage, too, to open up and realize, like, okay, well, people will accept me. And with Maggie as well, having the conversation, too.
And that's the one weird thing. I will say this. I'm jumping back a little bit, but that's the one weird thing about his logic, because he said that he felt DC had the best chance for survival, which I think we kind of assume, based on season one, when everyone thought Atlanta was the best chance for survival, that it's most likely not true that we're assuming that. But it's really interesting that even though he thinks that DC is the best chance for them to survive, he was too scared to ultimately get there because he knew he'd be found out.
Right.
So it's almost like where his, as intellectual as he is, as smart as he is, that's almost kind of like where his logic was completely flawed.
Yeah.
He's trying to get someplace to be safe, but he never wants to get there.
Well, yeah. Well, I think it's also the thing where, I mean, he always has to say, I'm smarter than you, which to me makes it seem like he's not actually that smart. If someone says, if I'm like, Nando, I'm smarter than you, and I have to keep on saying that.
I'm going to start saying,
you're going to be like Abraham, be like, you are smarter than me.
Jedi mind trick.
Yeah.
I'm smarter than you.
But yeah, it's the thing where, like, you only have to reaffirm that so you can, if it's not true. So it's just something where, to me, I've always taken him as a character who, I mean, he has some book smarts, clearly. Yeah. And he's well-read, but there's all different types of smarts, and that doesn't necessarily mean he's a smart or analytical thinker. He just knows a lot of random facts because he reads a lot.
Yeah.
And that's sort of how I took it to be. So he might not be the best at analyzing situations, which is where that failed logic came into play. He's like, I already started this. I guess I'm stuck in it.
Yeah.
And he just kept on going that logic loop.
Absolutely.
But we do get other characters in this episode, which would be Maggie and Glenn tagging along.
Yeah, let's talk about them.
Maggie and Glenn, who are both pretty, a little sad about leaving the group, and specifically Maggie feeling guilty for actually being hopeful for a change and actually being almost feeling guilty for being happy.
Yeah, I agree. She's thinking about people and feeling guilty. And it's interesting because it wasn't really talked about. It was talked about on The Talking Dead last week, We haven't had a chance to watch this week, so yeah. Forgive us. But it was talked about in talking to last week, but they just kept talking about how, you know, for Beth's episode, it's funny that Maggie's completely forgotten about Beth. And I even feel in that moment when she's like, I feel guilty. You know, she's not thinking about Beth. She's thinking about everyone else back at the church. She's not thinking about Beth. She's like completely forgotten about her sister.
Yeah, you know, it's funny too, because you mentioned that, and I forget in this episode that Beth is Maggie's sister, because it's not even on my mind. I'm just like, yeah, she's sad about the group.
Well, I think that's, I don't know if that's on purpose. I feel like that's a flaw that maybe the writers kind of overlooked, because they've kept Maggie on her own storyline so much separate from Beth for so long that even when you see the two of them together, they don't look like sisters.
Yeah,
so
they don't seem sisterly at all.
So I just think that it's just been a point that's been forgotten but kudos to those in the talking.
You know, Maggie's like 10 years old. Older, she's like, it's like my little kid sister I never bonded with growing up, even though we were on a farm together.
Yeah, I just think it's just odd. But yeah,
no, I agree with you. It is odd.
But we see that. I mean, they obviously miss the others. Maybe they miss Beth. I don't know. But but I thought it was really, really peaceful seeing Glenn, too, talking to Abraham before he went to go have sex.
Yeah.
Abraham thanking him for... thanking him for coming along and being there, which we know calms Abraham down, knowing his people, and Glenn saying, you know,
we're with
I gave
you.
My word.
Yeah.
You know?
No, it's definitely, I like that Glenn and Abraham bonding moment a lot, especially...
right before Abraham wanted to kick his ass at the end.
Yeah, then Abraham in fury rage mode, not listening again, even though he knows Glenn's on his side.
Abe hulking up. Yeah, totally. But yeah, I mean, really, really touching, you know, and seeing a quiet moment with those two. We haven't really gotten to see the two of them really in a moment like that yet this season. So I thought it was really, really touching.
It also was a moment, too, for Abraham to open up a little bit as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that was, like, one of the first, like, calm moments with Abraham as they're just watching the walkers in the window. And, yeah, just as he's thinking. I mean, we've seen him, like, be kind to Rick, but he's still sort of in, like, leader mode. And I feel like this was one of the first times he sort of just opened up a little bit and was just, I don't know, like, he admitted his flaws to Glenn and said, like, you know, if you left, I wouldn't have had anything. There's no way I would have been able to stop you if you just turned around there.
Yeah.
I couldn't have done anything about it. And just actually opening up that he's not as in control as he appears to be.
Again, I think it really shows. I mean, we see Eugene now in a vulnerable state now that he's confessed. And I think we see Abraham forcing himself to be with people. And I think Abraham wants to be vulnerable. I think that's the thing. But I think Abraham, kind of like Eugene, when he shows his true self, which we saw in the flashback, which was an animalistic side, which whether, you know, whatever his reasons are, and I think ultimately they're good reasons. I mean, Glenn even says you're a good man.
Right.
You know, that I think these are two characters who have not been showing their real side.
Yeah.
And when they do get to open up and be vulnerable, you'll see them be accepted more in the group.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, as he talks about, too, and he opens up and says, like, it's what's scary to him isn't that it's easy necessarily just fighting people. It's that it's so easy to fight people, specifically how easy it is for him, and it's scaring him what he's become. And I think that's something that, as a group, you've seen everyone else in the various groups struggle with that exact same predicament of, like, it's scary how inhumane we've all been becoming. So it's something where definitely if he opens up, I think everyone would be able to accept it and be like, we understand. Yeah. We go through the exact same issues.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah, that's definitely one of those issues that hopefully he will open up more about as the group goes on, because I'm assuming they're all going to stick together regardless of this
incident. I think they all are, and Tara seems to be fitting in really well. Although, really curious, I mean, everyone seems to be coupled off right now except for Tara and Eugene, so I think that makes it a little awkward. I mean, obviously Tara doesn't go that way.
Right.
Who knows? Maybe out of necessity she might, but...
I don't think so.
I don't
so.
Think it'll happen.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll happen. But we do see, I mean, obviously Tara saving Eugene saving Tara, I think that kind of at least leaves a friendship going on.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
and Tara definitely being someone. Tara, you know, talking about people who weren't who we thought they were.
Yeah.
If you remember Tara from last season, she was a badass. She went to, you know, the police academy. She knew everything about guns, all this stuff. And then we found out she was scared to death in battle and she was frozen. And so, I mean, if anything, I think she's a good person for Eugene to bond with.
Yeah, that's a great point.
In the sense that she's kind of had that too. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely a really good point with Tara. And also, it gives someone for them to talk to each other, because Rosita's very clearly, throughout a lot of the episode, very lovey-dovey with Abraham, with flirty with him and all that. And then Maggie and Glenn are in their own little unit, always off to the side by themselves for the most part, so it gives Eugene and Tara someone. And also, Tara's very much on the outside.
Yeah.
And a lot of, like, I feel like also with Rick's group, she felt very much like an outsider.
Well, exactly. Tara's on the outside, and Eugene feels like an outsider, even if he's not one. Even though he was the center of this mission, Eugene is very much an outsider.
So then they'll read the book The Outsiders, because Eugene's a reader, and then they'll bond together. It's Together Outsiders.
Well, I do want to bring up, I'm glad you said the word book, because I didn't want to forget this. I'm sure people will bring it up, but we did see one book in this episode toward the end, right before the whole confession and everything, and it was, Eugene was reading, it was one book I guess they didn't decide to burn for firewood.
Right.
And it was the H.G. Wells book, The Shape of Things to Come. Are you familiar with the book at all?
Because
I'm not.
I didn't have time to look it up, but I wrote it down.
Luckily, I have a laptop here.
Hooray!
And I pulled it up because I wanted to do that. Because, we came in here right after the episode ended, so we didn't have a chance to really look up everything. But I'll read this. This is from Wikipedia. Just want to credit them. The Shape of Things to Come is a work of science fiction by H.G. Wells, which we saw in the book, published in 1933, which speculates on future events from 1933 until the year 2106. In the book, a world state is established as the solution to humanity's problems. I think that's a very, very interesting, interesting thing, because I feel like that might be a foreshadowing of what might be coming in this world. A world state established as a solution to humanity's problems. As the frame story, Wells claims that the book is his edited version of notes written by an eminent diplomat, Dr. Philip Raven, who had been having dream visions of a history textbook published in 2106 and wrote down what he could remember of it. Actually, no, that wasn't what I wanted to read.
Dream visions. Like he was on hallucinogenics.
You know what? You know? He's an artist. Maybe he is. Here it is. Here's what I wanted to read. The Shape of Things to Come was written as a future history. Seen in retrospect, it can be considered as an alternate history diverging from reality in late 1933 or early 1934. The point of divergence being U.S. President Franklin D. Roosevelt's failure to implement the New Deal and revive the U.S. economy, and Adolf Hitler's failure to revive the German economy by rearmament. Again, I think it's really, really interesting, because it sounds to me, the way I'm reading this, it sounds to me like this is a choice point in this world. And whether it's a choice point as far as their mission to go to D.C., or it's a choice point as far as that world state, I really think it's kind of like almost like a bookmark to where we are and how things are changing.
Yeah.
And, of course, the first thing that happens now is we find out Eugene was really lying, and which changes their whole, who knows what's going to happen to this group now.
And another way, too, when you think about it, with this being something where in the book it's about what if this thing that ended up curing the world didn't happen. Because if you really look at it in that way, and obviously I haven't read the book, but if it is that case of like that's what cured America was that program.
Yeah.
And what happened without that program that cured it? This is essentially Eugene curing the world, and now what's going to happen without him having cured the world? So that might be a potential parallel.
Possibly.
But I haven't read the book, so I can't 100% say. Well, that's just a brief analogy.
Yeah, I was going to say, if anyone's read the book or knows more information, or if I'm getting, I mean, I'm reading straight off of Wikipedia here, and I'm just making my own assumptions or judgments based on what I'm reading. But if anyone's read the book and has anything else, please feel free to put it on YouTube. I'd love to read other theories about what the book signifies. Because I'm sure, knowing Scott Gimple and Kirkman, they put everything like visible for a reason.
Oh yeah.
So I'm sure that book being the one book, when they're burning books earlier in the episode, I'm sure there must be a really, really good reason to show H.G. Wells The Shape of Things to Come.
You have to hope there is. Every prop's supposed to have a meaning.
So, Kirkman will get interviewed later on and be like, you know what? It was the only book hanging out.
Yeah, it was just lying around.
It was the first book we grabbed, and we just put it up.
So I guess the HW view saying, Eugene is the perfect analogy for most males who are geeks. And as a geek, I can attest to I'm always in the self-help section.
Looking at girls from across the other side of the bookstore.
Exactly. It's always in the bookstores. Really,
well, pretending to look at self-help, but really is checking out the girls.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a little awkward, but it's all right.
Absolutely.
So something we've been talking about the characters, but something we could also touch on too is I enjoy with the library scene the way that they immediately set up camp and how they set up base camp.
Yeah.
And I liked watching what they that the way they dealt with the toilet water and how they have clean water.
God, that was so interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The fact that they were using toilet water as, oh my God, that puts a whole new spin on things when you think about how long they've been out in the world and they have to do things like that.
But it's just it seems so obvious to them and they just know that, but
it's very matter-of-fact.
It makes sense too, though. Like, you boil water and then that's how you clean it, so maybe that's, I don't know if you want to do it with the water that a walker's been lying in, like the well in season two, but
or the what we saw earlier when Bob got bit in that
area where Bob got bit.
Yeah.
By the way, another thing that I've noticed with this season, it seems like the theme is wet walkers. So wet and wild walkers. It's like walkers gone wild with
you know
the wetness.
That is really interesting, especially because they mentioned the toilet water, and then of course we saw the scene in the fire truck when Eugene grabs the hose, the fire cannon up top. And, well, two things that came to mind. First of all, and I was watching it with our engineer sometimes. I don't think he's doing it this time, Steve Lemieux. And Steve said this, and he said, well, why don't the walkers just get back up? Because it is just a water cannon.
Right.
And it hurts people, but it doesn't really kill living people. It's just really, really painful and knocks people out. It's used more for riots than anything. So that was one good point that I thought about. And then the other point, of course, was like, hey, and I'm sure you were thinking the same thing. Hey, Maggie and Tara and Rosita, all wet t-shirts. Wet t-shirt contest right there.
Yes.
So looking pretty hot. And even Abraham was like, we don't have to go to Goodwill and get new clothes. Just let it air dry out.
And I'm like, okay.
Let it air dry out.
I'm with you, Abraham. As far as I thought about the walker thing with the fire hose, and I figure that it's probably that the pressure is so high with these walkers that are already decrepit and falling apart.
Yeah.
That's possible that shooting them with that hose was able to destroy what was left in their head, because you see their flesh peeling away as they're getting hit by it. So perhaps you were supposed to think that it actually does destroy what's on the top
point,
part.
Because if you think about it, I mean, they even mentioned how clean the town was in comparison to other places they've been to.
Yeah.
And then we realize it's because they put all the sick in the firehouse and used the truck.
Oh, yeah, the fire truck was holding it in.
Was holding that door. So if you think about it, they've been in there for an extended period of time because the town was kind of relatively in good condition.
Yeah.
And they probably didn't have much to feed off of. So it does make sense that perhaps they were weaker than your average walker. They could still obviously do damage, but it was probably enough for a water cannon to perhaps
at least destroy that top bar or whatever it hits.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, it's also like, I mean, it's been years at this point too with the walkers, and presumably this town's been abandoned for a long time, and they aren't fresh walkers anymore, and we've seen the less fresh they are, the less flesh they have. So I think possibly that high water pressure was just enough to, they don't have skin to protect them.
But the worst thing that happens, and Bart from the chat room just said it, you know, he said, I wouldn't have wasted that water. I think a lot of people are
thinking that.
After the toilet water thing, it's like, you would love, oh my God, we have so much water in this truck.
See, that's what I was thinking when he was doing that. I was like, Eugene, come on! Like, all your group can take care of this. They've proven it. Although I guess they were in trouble.
They needed some help.
They needed help, but I was thinking, really, they didn't. But
all of it,
all the water. Yeah. And that's especially after Abraham made the point of like, we got this fire truck, all this water, we're set to go, and then you just use it all. It's just like, that was it. That's what you had.
I know.
Yeah,
that was such a shame.
It's a huge shame. All right, I'm trying to look. Like, I think that pretty much covers the main thing. I mean, I guess there's the moment that's a decent moment that we didn't cover, which is with the fire truck, the fact that after everything happens, that's when they uncover and finally see the note about the walkers.
Sick inside. Yeah, it's sick inside.
It's just that, like,
yeah, that was just a nice...
But it's just more of a dark humor.
It was an explanation point to the whole scene, and Abraham started laughing when he saw it. Yeah,
just that that dark humor of, like, oh, this is what the world is now, and that's just so humorous, but I think that that covers the main points of this episode, unless there's something specific you wanted to bring up.
No, not really. I mean, you know, we did something. Hopefully you guys liked it this week. We changed it up a little bit instead of doing a play-by-play.
Yeah, you have to let us know what you think.
Yeah.
Especially with this episode, we figured that it was so scene-by-scene, and we couldn't break it up by storylines, that we wanted to do something a little different and a little fun. So we hope you guys enjoy it that way.
One thing I do want to say, and forgive me, I mean, that's the thing when we go for characters, and if we forget something, I'll go back. I really loved the ending scene. And I just want to say, just shout out to Josh. Even though you didn't come on our show, shout out to you for this episode. I just loved Eugene's confession, and when he said he was a coward, and people were like, "Don't you realize all the people who died for your mission?" And he had that moment, and he just recited all these names, word for word for word, and he finished off with Bob, and he even put Bob in there. And I thought that was a really, really touching moment from Eugene.
Yeah.
You know? And again, showing some vulnerability and some openness and realizing what has happened and how, and even, and not just that scene, even the final flashback when Eugene gets saved, when we see Abraham about to kill himself. Which we didn't really bring up, but and again, I think this is why Eugene said he was not valuable. Again, another show where someone actually said, "I have no value."
Does it parallel as well?
The other show also had a character, same character who was in the room watching people have sex, said that same line.
Whoa!
Said that same line. That's so weird.
It is.
You know, I'll just say what I show some, it was. It was Homeland.
I think some writers might be sleeping with each other.
I don't know. Maybe doing double duty,
or maybe watching each other. Other writers sleep together.
It's weird, but yeah, Saul Berenson from Homeland did the exact same thing in both of those things. Very minor spoiler if you haven't watched Homeland. I apologize. Feel free to yell at me on the comments. But again, seeing Abraham almost kill himself, and then Eugene run over, and then Abraham just, you know, like a machine, just kill them, walk away, and see that change in Eugene, like all helpless, like, wait. I'm on a mission, and it was really, really awesome.
That's a
great
point. He actually, really, he saves Abraham.
Well, that's
by doing that. Yeah, so that's
value,
a great point. Yeah.
His value ultimately is hope for Abraham. And that's why I even said before when Abraham had that little close up when he mentions T. Brooke Ellis and Abraham, he did look like, I almost felt it was a look of doubt, but Abraham ignored it because I think ultimately he didn't want to think of Eugene as a liar.
Right.
Because that was his only reason for living at this point.
Yeah.
For the mission, for the good of the mission.
His only hope.
Yeah. Help me one, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
It's,
yes.
His force. What's new? Episode 7?
The Force Awakens.
It's his Force Awakening. people aren't going to forgive me for not knowing the name of that.
No, it's okay.
So, I agree. That was a great way to wrap the episode 2 and really good acting on both scenes. And also, like, man, when Eugene's head slammed back against the window, I was thinking, like, and like knowing fight choreography and the way they do it, to me it was pretty obvious that the punch that Abraham threw was in front of Josh McDermott's face, but then I was thinking, like, when he actually slammed his head against the fire truck, I was like, man, that looked real. That looked like that would hurt. So props to you, Josh McDermott, for actually throwing your head back and doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it was really good.
Nice selling point.
Really good selling point. Really funny. Really funny moment seeing him all bloodied up at the end. Yeah, really awesome.
But.
So, do you want to talk? I have a little bit of news and gossip, and you want to talk a little bit about the comic book stuff?
Yeah, let's do news and gossip, then we'll go comics. Predictions.
Okay, the one thing that I have, and I just had it before, you know, apparently censors, according, if you want to believe Twitter and you want to believe Michael Cutlass, censors were really close to pulling tonight's episode, or at least pulling scenes from tonight's episode. Apparently the actual sex scene with Rosita and Abraham, with Eugene watching that whole thing was actually something that the censors were concerned about.
AMC. So it's like, okay.
Even on AMC.
All right, so we got all this blood and gore and all that, but man, two people having sex.
Michael Cutlass actually, he tweeted out yesterday on the 8th, the censors almost pulled tomorrow's episode. Be the first to watch Walking Dead _ AMC. Hashtag I might get fired. So I don't know if he was just teasing or what, but it's just pretty funny that considering all the goriness that we see. Well, no, obviously
no, hashtag I might get fired. That means if his character dies off.
That would have been actually really interesting.
Then he could just be like, I got fired, and just say that's what it is.
That would have been really interesting if that actually happened. He got killed like that.
Or the next episode. Well, it'd be like in 2 episodes from now, because he just tweeted that out. And so he could just like be like teasing that.
Don't do that. We still like you. We like you a lot. But so really, really interesting point, considering how much violence there is in this show and goriness and how realistic it is, that we don't really see sex scenes that often. But I guess the censors were a little bit concerned about that scene.
Yeah, I don't think you saw anything at all. So I'm just, I don't know.
I'm going to have to rewatch that from
really
the self-help,
closely.
From the self-help section of my local
make sure
bookstore.
It's self-help. That's the best view that you can get.
Just to see if I really see anything. But no, I don't think they really show. It's AMC. They can't really show too much.
I'm just thinking, like, do I believe that, or is it just joking? Like, it's just like, that seems so far out there for a show like this, that a scene where you couldn't see anything.
It does seem a little far-fetched. I mean, I pulled this from wetpaint.com, but it was originally from a Cutlass tweet. So it did get at least picked up on something.
All right.
So really, really interesting.
All right. So is that news and gossip.
That's all I really have. All right,
so we're going to do comic book comparisons again. We'll specifically do things that have already been covered, but if you want to tune out now, all we're going to do after this is predictions.
And yeah, really, it's just what we've seen and comparing it to the comic book, so we're not spoiling anything that's coming up ahead. At least that's the way I look at it.
No, that's the way I look at it, too. And it's just like some people get mad because like, they're like, oh, well, what if this alternate version is something they're going to use later?
Eventually, I'm going to read the books, and I don't want to know. I think the real interesting thing is how Eugene, how the lie comes out in the comic books, and I wanted to refer to it because I thought it was interesting because Eugene always had a satellite phone in the comics, and he was always talking in the satellite phone, and that was classified. No one else was allowed to use the satellite phone. And ultimately, what ended up happening is he dropped the satellite phone, and it was discovered that there were no batteries in it, and he was just using a phone the whole time.
Yeah, it's definitely a very different way to come out, whereas this one, it gives him more of a courageous way to come out.
Yeah.
Where that was your bluff's been called.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Absolutely. And really, you know, as far as the reveal, it comes around the same time, I think, that it comes in the comics. Like, they're on this trip. They're all together. You know, the whole thing with them splitting up and the whole Beth storyline's not in the comics, but this comes around the same point.
Right.
Like, basically after the prison, there was no Terminus in the comics, but after the prison and after the Hunter storyline.
I mean, Terminus and the hospital, too.
Well, Terminus and the hospital were not.
I'm saying the hospital as well. That's what. Yeah, yeah.
They're not in the comic.
Because that's the whole reason they stuck behind. So that's why I'm pointing out that wasn't in the comic either.
Yeah. So. But I mean, I'm loving it because you know there are times when we're like, oh wow, they're deviating a lot from the comics. It feels like, or they're adding storylines, and then all of a sudden we see something familiar, but which I think is interesting.
Like last week's episode, very familiar. Or 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago's episode. Yeah, sorry. Last week was the hospital. 2 weeks ago's episode was very familiar.
Really awesome. Love that.
Yeah. But yeah. So it's just another way to play off of it. And definitely it also changes, in a way, it does change his character, the way that he came out.
Well, because, he's forced, he's forced to confess in both ways, but I think it's a little more redeeming in this episode than in the comics.
Well, that's what I mean, is it's a more redeeming because he's not only saving himself, but the others, too, in a sense.
Yeah. So, yeah, again, kind of like you said it really well. This is an episode where I think he gains his confidence and gains his power a lot more. And I think this is obviously going to lead, I think, to our next segment, but I think it's really going to show a lot more. We're going to see, I think we're going to see a lot more Eugene.
And speaking of which, let's go ahead and go to predictions. Yeah. What a good segue.
That was a good segue.
And now, you're after Buzz TV.
All right, so do you want to go with your Eugene predictions, or should we talk about the previews?
You know what? I can't... You know what's so weird?
Now it's out of your mind?
I can't remember the previews. So okay, that's good for me.
All right, well, go ahead and do your prediction then with Eugene, and we'll go previews.
I just want to say that, obviously, now that we see this, I think I've been hinting at it, that we're going to see a total shift in Eugene. He's going to actually be a lot more valuable to the group. He's going to learn to fight. He's going to find use in the... I don't think he's going to be a good fighter, but he's going to find use within the group. And you know what? Let's just say it. It's not going to happen with Tara, but he's going to get a girlfriend. He's going to get a girlfriend. Who knows who? I don't know if it's going to... I'm not going to say if it's going to be anybody that we've seen already or somebody new. But, yeah, I think he's gonna find a little a little love. He's going to find his own... He's going to find his own self-help section.
If that does happen, I think that would ultimately change his character. I think he'd be the character who would then end up probably being the... save his love interest over himself. Yeah. And that would be the typical arc you would see. But as far as the previews, it's all about Daryl and Carol going in to save Beth and find Beth, and that's what everything we were seeing was. And as we see, it looks like they're really kicking ass. This prediction that some of you guys had in the comments, I read one of them from the live show last week, and actually DirtyWater2K tweeted at me about this, saying, I can't believe only one of you suggested Melissa McBride got caught on purpose. I thought Melissa McBride being caught was too easy. She just destroyed Terminus single-handedly. It was her and Daryl's plan. I think her and Daryl ran into the kid. He told them what was happening, and she volunteered because they take in women. So, essentially, this was the idea that some of you guys posed, that she is a Trojan horse in herself and has become a Trojan horse to go in and infiltrate from the inside, which is a really interesting idea that from these previews it makes it look like that's a strong possibility, because we don't see them really getting caught. in the preview specifically.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I mean, I wasn't here last week, so I'm trying to think if you know, I could totally see both sides of it. I feel like as badass as she is, I can't help but feel that she got caught. And now that I think about it, and I think this is the point where anyone who doesn't like to watch scenes from next week might want to just tune out.
Yeah.
So start tuning out now. I think that, you know, we're going to see that how she got caught, obviously, in next week's episode. And I think she actually, you know what, as good as you are, everyone messes up every now and then.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, you could be a total huge badass. And we've seen that throughout all of Walking Dead. And no one's perfect and everyone slips up.
If someone's indestructible and can kill everybody, after a while it does get a little boring. So I think she does get caught flat-footed somewhere.
Yeah, you got to hope no one is infallible. And you got to hope they don't make a character on the show who is infallible. Because that's just... And you just have Superman.
Exactly. They're all flawed in some kind of way. So I could see Carol getting caught. I think she actually legitimately got caught or knocked out somehow.
Yeah. But I still think it's an interesting prediction. So I want to throw that out as that is one. But I guess from the previews, I don't know. I honestly agree with you. I still think the whole Trojan horse thing, I can see it being a really cool idea, but... I like to see characters who are flawed, and I actually kind of hope it's not that. As badass as it could be, I'd like to see Carol get taken and have more dimensionality to her character than just now she's the ultimate badass who can kill everybody.
Yeah.
So, anyways, that wraps up this AfterBuzz show for Walking Dead. Thank you guys so much for tuning again in. I'm flopping my words. That's why it's time to end the show. That's really what it is. I was like, it's that time that I can't speak anymore. So, guys, thank you for joining in. Once again, I'm Dave Klein. You can find me on Twitter at TheDaveKlein. That is KLEIN.
I don't have Joyce. I don't remember Joyce's Twitter or Daryl, but please catch them on Twitter as well. They'll be back next week. And you can find me on Twitter at Nandovel, NANDOVEL. And here on that, we can find us both on other AfterBuzz shows here. Yeah.
Other shows, like other Homeland shows. Fernando, yes. As we kept on saying. This was actually just a big tease for
apparently
that.
Apparently, just watch this show and you got Homeland down too.
It's just a constant tease for, by the way, he's on Homeland. That's all this entire episode is about.
I just promoted other shows on the shows I'm on.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Later.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.